Hello, everyone, to this week's W3C CCG meeting. Today we have a last minute change of agenda. A speaker got sick. I think if they are in California, I think you'll know that it's very, very cloudy and cold. It's like the weirdest June ever. So a lot of people got sick. But anyway, we'll push back the original agenda of OpenID for VCs and verifiable presentations to our later date. And today we'll just talk about the overview of VC JOT with our fellow co-chair, Mike here. Mike will do the presentation and we'll have the discussions, great discussions around this. But before we start, just want to do a quick reminders on the code of ethics and professional conduct. Just want to make sure that everyone, be respectful to each other. Honestly, I haven't seen any disrespectful comments in the past year or year and a half, but just want to give a quick shout out to the Code of Ethics and Professional Conduct reminder. All right, quick IP note. Anyone can participate in these calls. However, all substantive contributions to any CCG work items must be a member of the CCG with full IPR signed. Make sure you have a W3C account. If you have any questions or encounter any issues, just let any of the co-chairs know. These meetings are being recorded, and the minutes are automatically transcribed. We will publish the meeting minutes and audio recordings within the next few days. Generally, actually, we've been pretty good within the next 24 hours, but sometimes it'll take a few days. All right. We use GC chat to queue speakers. You can type in Q plus to add yourself to the queue, Q minus to remove, and you can do Q question mark to see who's in the queue. All right. Introductions and reintroductions. If you're new to the community or you have any change of affiliations or you haven't been engaged and you want to re-engage, feel free to unmute yourself and kind of introduce yourself a little bit. Okay, what about announcements or reminders? Any announcements or reminders? Anu, please.
Just a real quick announcement that I sent out to the mailing list. We've had a pretty nice breakthrough regarding some work around data integrity in Anoncred's V2. Let me put this in the chat channel, Anoncred's V2 and data integrity. As some of you know, there's a long history of us trying to figure out how to get Anoncred's and some of the work that we do in this community to converge. And over the past 2 weeks, Stephen Curran and Patrick St. Louis from the Digital Identity Lab of Canada and province of British Columbia were able to demonstrate Anoncred's V2 working with the W3C data integrity specification. So this is a big deal because we've been trying to figure out a way to get this stuff to work together for the past 6+ years. And with this newest kind of demonstration, which was also shared with the Anoncred's community, I think last week at a workshop, we finally got some sort of convergence. So there's a post on the mailing list about this called, Anoncred's V2 and Data Integrity Convergence. Folks should take a look there. That's pretty big news. And that's, of course, on the heels of us also sharing the ECDSA selective disclosure, the Data Integrity Selective Disclosure scheme the previous week. So what we're seeing here is a number of different communities kind of converging, using data integrity as a mechanism to kind of secure verifiable credentials. Anyway, good news. That's it. Thanks.
Thank you, Manuel. I've been following the thread. It's a really interesting read. If you haven't been following, I would encourage you to read it. So thank you. Any other announcements or reminders? Any updates to the work items? All right, a quick note on the upcoming meetings. I know that people have been talking about they would love to get some speakers to discuss the intersection of AI and identity. So if you have any speakers or anyone that you think that we would like to invite to have these kind of discussions here, just let any of the co-chairs know. And also, I think to the earlier Manu's comment in regards to data integrity, earlier we have a presentation on selected disclosures. If there's any one that you want us to kind of invite to hold those discussions, please let us know as well. Okay. All right, so let's get to the main agenda. So today we have a last minute change of the agenda, and today we're going to talk about the VC JOT or verifiable credentials JSON web token instead. The main speaker who's going to talk about the presentations on VC JOT will be Mike Porock. I don't think he needs any further introductions. He's our beloved co-chairs. I think the fact that he was able to, it's really nice, by the way, to have a speaker ready to go at any time. So so just want to say thank you to him for that. I think the table is yours, Mike.
Yeah, thanks, Harrison. And definitely. If you don't know me, I'm just a nerd. I'm one of the co-chairs in this group. I am firmly taking my co-chair hat off at this point and gonna talk about some of the stuff I'm doing as an editor with VC JOTS, and especially changes and things like that that have come about as part of the 2.0 working group. So if you have questions overall around VC, the VC working group, et cetera, Brent's on the line. Christina may or may not be on the line, but the chairs are normally in attendance here for that working group. A big part of my focus for that working group has been on the JOT side. And wanted to really kind of talk through some of the things that actually are a little bit of a change from the way at least JOTS and 1.1 and things like that were. So I'm going to set the stage by saying that, and this is, once again, this is just personal hat here, right? As an implementer, as someone who's been, kind of got pulled into this ecosystem for a variety of reasons, one of the things that always kind of bugged me about 1.0 and 1.1 and things related to JOTS or other securing mechanisms was it really didn't feel like you were doing VCs. Kind of the payloads and things like that required either mappings or transformations, and things were weird, right? And so one of the things that really got hammered out so far, and it's been a huge amount of work and friendly conversation between members of the working group to really come to, I think, consensus around a couple of things. One, that were specified in the charter for the working group. So let's make sure we can secure the core data model. And then also, how do we represent media types or content types for these items and things like that? Notably, and I'm going to stay away from this side of the topic, there are people that could probably dive in really deep on this side. I probably could as well, but because it's a little bit contentious still, is this question of, like, if you just want to do JOTS with registered claims and, ISS and sub, et cetera, I think there's still some open discussion just from issues and PRs that are being debated as to whether, where does that stuff live, right? Does that live in the VC JOT spec? Does it live elsewhere? If it does live in the VC JOT spec, how do we make sure it's a good compliant VC, et cetera, and things like that? So that some of that stuff's up a little bit up in the air. But what we do have now is a really good way of securing the core data model. And I wanted to just roll back as a starting place and talk just a bit about what do VCs actually bring us? Why are they interesting, right? And what they're really interesting for is providing a good standardized way of exchanging credentials. Now, a lot of times this stuff, gets thought of in a personal context, right? Your driver's licenses, answering questions like age verification from an identity card, right? Man, is the one that always comes to mind when I think about VCs for a lot of reasons. And I know that's a use case he works heavily with there. From our interactions, I actually tend to deal as an implementer with VCs in two other areas. One is around data and data verification, and has this data been tampered with or modified? And claims about how that information was gathered, as well as claims related to supply chain credentialing for regulatory purposes. And these are different cases, right? You have things where some of the stuff, while might be a little different, right? You might want things like correlation and traceability throughout the chain, whereas in personal cases, you may not, right? And that's one of the beautiful things about the three-party model that Verifiable Credentials brings to us, right, as a specification, is that we have these multiple roles that are clearly defined, and credentials can pass between intermediaries and be received and still verified, right? And that's a neat thing. That's a neat trick, and it's done in a nice standardized way, and it gives us the ability to link back into really solid semantics so that machines can actually have good understanding of the meaning of the data under the hood. At a minimum, what does the VC itself mean, right? And the claims in a VC itself mean. That's a really helpful set of properties. And so a lot of the motivation around this work in general rolls back to that three-party model and the ability to go in and support a lot of cool use cases from this in a very strong, privacy-preserving, manner. So with that kind of background, I want to take a look at basically what does a VC look like now if you're in the VC JOT world? And this has been interesting because I've been going through and running some implementations on the traceability side and running a bunch of different implementations on different test sets and different extensions and things like that lately. And one of the neat things is that you can do things now, like as long as you're setting this header properly, and we'll get into what goes in there in just a little bit, the payload is just a normal verifiable credential, what you would typically see as a credential, right? It's the claim set gets passed in, and you can literally just rip out from a lot of these vocabularies. I'll use traceability as an example, but obviously there's citizenship and others, where you have these well-defined JSON-LD vocabularies and schemas and validation stuff. Just rip that example out and dump it right in, right? Cool, nifty, right? And what's going on with a JOT? If you're not familiar, JWTs are often called JOTs. As nerds are wont to do, we tend to jumble things together and pronounce them in weird ways, especially acronyms. And what's going on basically is that there's a conversion and encoding, right, of the header and the payload, as well as ultimately the signature once it's generated, into what's called base64 URL. So it's just base64, but entirely web safe, right? It's URL safe. So some characters are flipped around. Standard libraries for this stuff. And what that encoding gives you is that ability to transmit that information over the wire, embedded in a URL, et cetera. Right. Yes. Notepad or, yeah. Lets you kind of pass that stuff around in a safe manner and know that what you're doing, what you're going to get is the same on the other side. Right. That's a helpful property. Right. The data integrity stuff, I think everyone's familiar with, but that gets at this kind of problem a different way. Right. It runs a canonicalization and get your end quads and you sign those end, or hash and then sign or, sign those end quads. And that's what you're getting, right? You're getting the signature of a transform method. This is much more, let's take an encoding and sign that encoded version. Right? Now, what goes in the header here, right? And so they're going to talk about the header a bit. Well, a couple of things, from a verifiable credential side, probably first and foremost, and one of the things that I think is unique about the way VCs leverage JOTS as a, you know, format for exchanging this information is that the key ID, right, is a lot of times just pointing back to a did web or something like that, right? So it's giving you a way to go identify what is the key material involved with signing or verifying this JOT. The ALG, we're going to come back to that. What I think is, probably though, the most interesting thing is that there's two things involved, two new media types, that are coming about. And there's a little at risk asterisk here, which is that there's double pluses in these things. So depending on what happens at IETF, we may have to adjust this a little bit, but it'll be some version of this, which is the type is a VC, so verifiable credential that is linked data because the core data model is linked data. And it's encoded in a JOT format, right? So it's in a JSON web token. What's interesting also is the CTY, the content type. This tells us that what do we expect as far as the claim set to be, right? What do we expect to be in the payload, right, as you encode it? Well, this gives us a really strong hint here, right? It's a verifiable credential conforming to the VC core data model. It's linked data because the core data model is a linked data data model, and it's in JSON, right? JSON and LD is ultimately just JSON at the end of the day. And so that can give you some processing instructions about what to do with this after you get it out, right? After you've gone through and verified the signatures. And I'm assuming Harrison per normal is watching the queue because I can't monitor both chat and otherwise. So if you feel like queuing up, just raise hand, type Q plus, whatever, get in. So now let's roll back to that ALG thing, right? ALG specifies what is the algorithm we're expecting here, right? What is the actual algorithm from a signing standpoint? And this has relation to other things, right? But things that oftentimes will get confused. So key types, for instance, or the curve name, right? And these are not the same thing. And the nice thing about ALG is that there's a really good reference to where to go to find out what should be in there. And I've got this in the handy links section. But if you're not familiar with it, there's this really cool thing that IANA gives us, which is where do we go through and look for the algorithm location and figure out how to go handle this stuff and what RFC it's related to or other spec, et cetera, right? In fact, you can see interesting things like, what about stuff pointing back to W3C, you know, specs? So it's a really good set of directions and master list. The other thing that I think is important is sometimes you'll hear things like, oh, well, with Jose or Cose, right, you got to go in and implement all the things, right? Well, not really. I mean, to a degree, it's important to represent a certain baseline for compatibility. And how to know that if you're going through and double-checking your implementation or things you may or may not want to down-profile from, they actually give you the Jose recommendation requirements right inside here. I think Ori's put the Cose equivalent in the chat. But they'll tell you, is this a required algorithm? Is it optional? Is it really strongly recommended, right? Recommended plus. And also things like, don't use this thing. It's prohibited. It's bad for whatever reason. Right. In fact, we just, the last couple of IETFs went through and, pushed some of this stuff through where it's like, yep, this is a thing that's out there. You really don't want to use it outside of very odd, you know, scenarios that are well understood. So with that, I think the other thing that's worth noting is the fact that this does set up, you know, some other goodies, right? Any of the other JOT stuff that you're familiar with or want to leverage, you know, X5C, for example, right? If you want to tie stuff back into, hey, I want to make sure you're going and verifying the certificate chain also, right, with this and stuff like that. So it sets up some of those abilities there. So what goes in the payload? Well, it's a VC, right? It's straight core data model VC.
Menu has a question.
Yeah, Mike, on your last slide, the X5C stuff, are there any plans, to use X5C in VCJOD or like write any algorithms or anything like that?
I don't think we would need to write any additional text there, honestly. And part of the reason for that is it's already well defined in the RFC. And so because that verification's happening as part of like, here's this container around the signed data, and the encoding, you know, we would push back to that original RFC on that. But I could say for sure that there are cases, like I'm thinking of regulatory cases especially, where we may, in a profile, for instance, right, are saying, hey, here's how do we want to go handle this in this very specific case. That seems like a really good place. I'm thinking of traceability, though we probably won't do it there, as something where you might want to point out and say, hey, if you're doing this, you want to leverage this X5C property or X5U, and go point back to it. Does that make sense, Mana?
Yeah, interesting. Thanks.
Yeah. And that's, and honestly, this is one of the things I like about this is you don't have to reinvent the wheel or go back and revisit things unless there's a real good reason to, right? You got to kind of ask yourself first foremost, like, does this thing already exist? Is it already well defined? And is there some reason I would want to down select that behavior? Cause there oftentimes are, right? There are a lot of cases where an RFC might be real broad or, things like if you think about did core, right? You know, there, you wind up with these very broad things in a spec to account for a lot of use cases that may not be applicable in a case where you need tighter security or verification and stuff like that. Payload. Well, fortunately, we've got a data model and a bunch of examples and a bunch of vocabularies in this group and everything else. So that's what goes in the payload, right? It's all that work that we're actually doing from a more business logic side, right? In the structured side. Now, how do I issue this stuff? Right? If I want to create a VC, what do I do here? Right. That's where you get into some interesting stuff here. And I think a strong benefit from this side, which is generally speaking, you're going to use in whatever language, you like to program in. In my case, I'm a lazy, so I like to code in Python. And I also do a lot of machine learning, so I like to code in Python. But I also write Go for production code typically, or at least look at it and have people that work for me write Go. And Rust and things like that that are better for different kinds of scenarios. But really all you're doing is just calling in, if I'm thinking right off the top of my head, you would call into the sign operation, right? Right on your JWT library, or JWK library. And so in the case of Python, that's literally just JWT.encode, right? That's it. And you pass it in what you're encoding. Pass in the private key you're signing with. You may have to specify ALG as a separate parameter, depending on your implementation. Sometimes it will read that from the header, right, depending on what's going on. And then it performs the gives you back a nice little encoded job, just like this over on the right-hand side. And I ripped these examples right from the VCJOD spec, by the way. Also double-check them pretty regular, as I think to Zori. Now, what about verification? Well, same thing. You use the built-in libraries you've got. So go ahead. Once again, I'll use Python since it's kind of built into my brain at this point in some areas, at least, where you go ahead and you say, yep, I want to decode and I've got this thing and, maybe I need to separate the signature, maybe not, depending on the, application. And here's the public key that I got. Now, obviously you're going to probably want to put some helper wrappers around this stuff, to apply by rules that you're most likely after in a verifiable credential side, like, hey, maybe I want did resolution on that key ID, right? And go ahead and get the public key and verify that and add some additional checking and stuff like that. So that's all left up to the implementer. But the core cryptography side is very separate from the data model side under this world. Now, I want to get at some security concerns. And this stuff's general, right? This is pretty broadly deployed stuff in the industry. So we've beat it up pretty good. We've found lots of fun ways to exploit it. Unfortunately, of course, sometimes the bad guys find that stuff before you do. The normal preface, though, first and foremost, is use good key material, good randomness, and protect your private keys, right? That's the same with any kind of cryptography, signing, et cetera. But there are things that are very specific, and in particular, the fact that ALG is not mandatory because it wasn't thought of that way originally as being a mandatory thing. You're thinking more of these private use cases with JOTS. And that's obviously evolved. This is pretty problematic, right? And so there were lots of things around that. And there's lots of good discussion rolling in the IETF around this. One of the people advocating for that has just joined the queue. So Ori, fire away.
Yeah, so just regarding ALG, obviously ALG none is pretty bad when you're putting it in a header parameter.
Yeah.
And you might really wish to set the algorithm when you generate a key representation so that that key is restricted to that algorithm from the point at which it's generated forevermore. But there are good arguments for why ALG was made optional.
Yes.
And one of them is that sometimes you know the algorithm because of the context that you're in or the profile that you're in. And, you know, if, for example, you're working with HPKE, which is a new cryptographic mechanism, and you're on an iPhone, you know the algorithm properties that the iPhone supports for that. So you kind of don't need to convey algorithm over and over and over again if you're in a system that only supports one algorithm. And so there are cases where the key restriction feature of algorithm is less meaningful because of the operational environment you're in. I still think, you know, whenever you have an opportunity to, you should be explicit instead of implicit. And you should, in general, avoid using the same key for multiple algorithms per the recommendations from NIST. That's it.
Yep. Yeah, it's a good call out because it's one of those areas that has definitely bit people, especially in terms of the authentication world, right? Exchange of credentials is a little bit different. But it's definitely something. There are really good reasons for the reason it is designed the way it is. In the verifiable credential use case, we probably want to be a little error on the safe side, right? It's not going to hurt us any. We're already packing in some extra data here. Other little random things, though, that I think people don't always think about, and this has to do with whenever you get some piece of information from anywhere on a network, right? You should just assume if there's a URI in there that it's probably not trustworthy. Right. Assume it came from a user and an attacker in particular. And so you can get into things like kid manipulation and, you know, pointers back into search chains that aren't valid or have weird loops and all sorts of other stuff to try to exploit something in another library like OpenSSL that might be present on your system. So there's just things to be aware of that, like, all the normal rules that come up have to be accounted for. And so if we think about our case with DIDs, right, where usually, at least from an implementer side in our case, like, we're always using DIDs, I think, for key material and discovery, you know, you've got to have good sanity checking and rules and stuff like that around there, right? So it's one of those things that's important. Because the header's signed, right, and I think Gori just – yeah, is beating me two things. I should have made him give this whether he wanted to or not. Which is that, you can lock in that out, right, and what's expected there when you issue a VC. So some recommendations when you're thinking about use of VCs, and I think some of this stuff is probably going to wind up in either implementation guide or in informative and editorial notes on the specification itself. But there's some stuff that typically tends to happen when we're thinking about VCs and VC JOTS, et cetera, which is, and I think this is a key difference. With VC JOTS, when you go through and start to do things like say, yep, you told me this is JSON LD. Now I want to go ahead and make sure it's JSON LD before I do something else. And maybe my rules say that I don't want to accept it if it's not valid, which probably is a good case in a lot of regulatory scenarios. But you're processing that after you've verified the signature, right? And so that's an important thing. You don't trust the data because it came from outside somewhere, but you have a little more trust in it, right? You got a little more confidence that the data at least wasn't tweaked around with before you received it. And maybe you're checking off of a trusted issuers list and things like that, right? These are questions that come up. Similarly, things like status list checking and stuff like that, the rules for that apply after, and the processing and inspection and then the acting all the data that you received and the more importantly, acting all the contents of the data you received don't happen until after you have verified that the signatures are sane. Now, some questions that come up like, hey, what if I don't want to mess with encoding this thing, right? I don't need this base64 URL stuff, right? I want a full expanded payload and stuff like that, right? Well, fortunately, the RFCs, you know, and IETF has given us a good mechanism for this, which is, you know, and I don't think this has been set, and maybe we will, maybe we won't look at this in VC JOTS, but, you know, there are very good standardized way to say, I want to do a, you know, JWT with an unencoded payload. Those are the cases where, yeah, you probably better be looking at something if you're not doing encoding of some kind, right, and so that it's reproducible. You may want to be looking at things like JCS or some kind of canonicalization prior to signing and stuff like that. And you better really be defining this stuff in either some kind of profile or interop specification that lets you know what both sides are and what the transport mechanism is and making sure that stuff is not going in. And yes, the header size definitely increases worry. So, Dave, I see you on the queue there.
Yeah, I just wanted to make an important note here around processing after verification, given the three-party model we're in. People who are implementing digital wallets should be aware of the fact that they're not always going to have an allow list or something for the issuers that they might trust. And so any attacker can create a DID key, for example, and they will produce, you know, a valid signature. So just be aware of that fact that a lot of the stuff in the ecosystem, anyone can generate a signature that will check out. And so that's an important consideration.
Yeah, 100%. And thanks for bringing that up, Dave, because I think that's something that a lot of people, you know, hear verifiable credentials, right, and assume that that means that this data should be trustworthy or something else, right? But it's... this is the kind of the downside to some of these aspects of things like self-sovereign issuers and stuff like that, right? Where sure, you're leveling the playing field, but not going to be appropriate for all cases, right? You should probably take things for what they're worth. So some nifty things that come from this, and this is actually the area that I think most excites me. It's not so much VC JOTS outside of, yes, finally we've got like the core data model and I can have good linked data that I want to go exploit in other ways from a knowledge graph standpoint, all this other cool stuff you can do with JSON-LD and, you know, linked data in general. You know, is the fact that this is really setting a path to, in a very consistent and standardized way, using off-the-shelf tooling, go down this path of how do we really start to look at this stuff in CBOR and binary, right? And this stuff gets really important when you're looking at large volumes of data going over the wire. This gets especially important, as I noted at the bottom there, right, when we start to need to start to look at things like detached payloads, right? Hey, I've got this big old file over here that I'm, you know, put registering a signature around and stuff like that. How do I do this, right? And if you're not familiar with COSE and CBOR and stuff like that, don't worry. Like we've actually got, as chairs, we already lined up some of the folks who actually wrote like the descriptor languages and actually I think the guy that wrote CBOR, funny enough, coming in a few weeks to go talk about what is CBOR, where did it come from, and all that kind of fun stuff. So if you need a primer on that, don't worry. We're going to make sure everyone knows where to go for this stuff. But COSE, and so CBOR, object signing and encryption, as opposed to HOSE, which is JSON signing and encryption. What we get from that is nifty stuff. Like, and the example I gave here is where you just take payload, right? Rip it over to CBOR. This is pretty standard in most libraries. So like in Python, it's just like, CBOR 2, dot, load S on a dict, right? You're there, right? You're in, right? You've got CBOR. It's just binary now. And then you can sign it normal mechanisms using whatever libraries you like for that. I've got COSE sign 1 as the example, right? And that's where there's one signature attached to this thing. It's pretty normal for a lot of EC use cases. There are other cases though that are covered by COSE. COSE sign in general is a little more loose. Like you might have multiple signatures and stuff like that. So it's an area worth exploring. a big note here, something that JOTS give us that CWTs and COSE don't really give us right now, right? And this is something that I think the working groups at IETF are kind of hammering out, is TYP, right? Content type's got a good reserved, tag. It's 3, I believe. So I plugged it in, but once again, going from memory here, so don't trust me on that. Verify, right? But you can set the content type that I'm expecting it to be good linked data conforming to verifiable credential core data model. But this TYP side, right, this is the non-standard side. Or you could probably rant your ears off about why we need to get that in. I actually agree with him. But it's going to take some work, right, to get that side of it covered. And it may be covered elsewhere. The content type is tag 3, and that has to do with binary encoding, et cetera, right? How do we tag this stuff? So on that, I do want to follow up on some things that make verifiable credentials better, and especially things with VC JOTS, right? Stuff that comes up a lot with data integrity and some of the values there is like, hey, you know, if terms got added to the context that you're using, right? If a term got modified, you'll know it. Term got added, you probably won't. But if a term got modified, right, your signature's going to break. It's cool, right? But you actually do really want to be checking whether this is on your side, just putting that logic in there, on your implementations, et cetera. But if you've got a remote resource, right, there are things like SRI and other specs you probably want to be looking at in terms of how do you actually make sure that when you're verifying something, you trust it. And especially in cases of context where you probably shouldn't be calling out to the web to grab that stuff, right? You should probably be working off of trusted, reviewed, cached copy. How do you know that cached copy is the one that got used at issuance time? So there is a pull request out on this. This is actually pointing back to an underlying issue in JSON LD that they have noted in the JSON LD spec. So just be aware of that, right? This kind of integrity aspect of knowing that remote resources are the same as what you're operating on is a big question, especially in general, right? If you think about the trade case, a lot of times you may have some external thing that you've got a signature of or a hash of that you need to be able to represent in a standardized way. Something comes up a lot for us. And I know this question has come up a lot in this group, has come up in the VC working group. So there is a PR on that. The other thing is that typically when I'm writing code, I want to make sure that I went through, I verified this signature, right? It is from who it says it is, the signature checked out, all that stuff. Now I want to know before I even take any steps, what are these checks I can perform to make sure that the structured data that I got, right, actually is what I think it is. Easy check first, right? Just check, make sure it's valid JSON. Cool. That's a good thing to do. Then probably check to make sure is it valid JSON LD, it's structured properly, et cetera. But you could probably even go further, right? And if you've got schemas and things like that, especially schemas defining what a VC is, or schemas that describe the vocabulary that you're specifically using, that's a good check. And then maybe you can think about operating on the contents of the thing that are in there. So these are all things you probably want to be layering on since we're asking questions about security and integrity and the validity of data. So with that, big old collection of helpful links if you've not seen them, just some starting places to go dig in. And I did include the last one, right? Just talking about the ubiquitousness of this kind of thing. But like Akamai, and I was digging around, and one of the things that I thought was interesting is they had a great old IoT example of like, yeah, I want some tokens and keys to exchange around and stuff like that. How do I just do that with Bash and OpenSSL and tools that are commonly installed on either my Mac or, Linux box, or if you're, on Windows, right, inside of, whatever their new containerization thing is that I'm sure as a developer you have installed because you really need things like piping and good tooling and, the rest of the Unix ecosystem there. So, this stuff is really built around a lot of prolific, widely deployed stuff. And a lot of times the tools are right there at your disposal to go start to play around with. So with that, I'm going to open it up for questions. And I had to get the dig in on Windows. But Ori, anything that I missed that you think I probably should have covered? Said sounds good. So he's probably doing like 3 meetings. Hey, man.
I'm curious about the cozy stuff, right? Cozy sign and thoughts there. Is the idea there to kind of follow the same direction that the VC Jot stuff has taken, which is, you know, you basically just take the core data model, you shove it in a CBOR object, and Cozy Sign won that, or are there other further optimizations that you're thinking of, like compression? Anyway, that's a great question.
Great question, Manu. This is my implementer individual hat on, right? For me, I think a good starting place that you kind of have to do, it's kind of why you have to do JSON in general these days anyways, is you got to start with what people know and what they're familiar with and support that as a base case, and then get into worrying about optimizations after the fact. So if I were to take a pick, and we've got this defined, right, in the spec, and I'm sure Ori will comment on this, but if I were to take a pick on preference, you rip it right over into CBOR, Cozy Sign 1. It's a clean starting place that everyone understands that's been, I mean, especially because of the software supply chain side of things, it's had a lot of eyes in on, like, what problems are we going to run into? How do we handle things like counter signatures later and witnessing stuff? And so there's lots of cool problems being explored in that space, and it's had a lot of, really, really good eyes in. Actually, some of them are on this call. I know some of the folks from RATS and other folks are on this call, but that's what I got there. Ori, do you want to comment specifically? I think I did call that out around the CTY side and, so content type and type. But Ori, do you want to comment explicitly on your thoughts there? Q minus. So I must have said close enough to what he was thinking that I was not totally wrong. Oh, there
we go. Yeah, I clicked the wrong button. Content type is the type of the payload. So, you know, if you wanted to secure different media types and you wanted to make sure that the registered media type would be well understood, you would go to the media types registry, which I can share a link, and it's got, you know, a million different known registered media types. And if you really wanted to secure one of those registered media types, you would put that registered media type as the content type. And then you would put the bytes of that payload that is of this content type in the payload, and you would secure it. And so what, you know, the Verifiable Credentials Working Group has done is it's defined it's requested a registration, right? And so it won't receive its requested registration from IANA until the multiple pluses issue is resolved. But, you know, assuming that the registration of IANA assignments will accept media type requests with multiple plus signs in the future, then you would expect to see VC plus LD plus JSON in the media types registry assignment from IANA. And then you could secure that content type with Cozy or any other system that understood media types, and that, you know, this is where you plug in those values. So, you know, for example, JWT, it's already in that media type registry, but that one is for the TYP property.
Yep.
That's the type of the token. It's a very confusing thing if you're just getting familiar with this. Content type is the type of the payload, but TYP is the sort of type of the entire token. And if you think about it, like, that's weird because it's a type property that's embedded inside of the content, which is actually also sort of the way RDF types work, where you're looking at the type property of a verifiable credential and you're seeing it's a permanent resident card, but you're embedded. That's a type that's embedded in that content. That's it.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Ori, I think that was well said. And I think that nesting of things, right, is a very common thing we see just in you know, comp in general, right? I've got some piece of data. I need to wrap it up somehow else and then go send it over the wire, do some things to it, get it back out, right? Harrison, I think you're up on the queue. I could be wrong though.
Yeah. Actually, I have a question, to Ori. I think earlier we have a lot of sidebar comments, and then Ori, you mentioned something about the device trust stores and then also sub-resource integrity. Like, what are those things? Are they related?
So device trust stores are usually part of your operating system. There will be a place where you can install certificates. And this is your attacker's favorite place to install things because it allows for your operating system to process things that it maybe wouldn't normally have processed. And so a common example of this is like when your employer installs certificates on your device that are specific to your employer's network. And they do that to meet with your employer's, security policies. Or in another case, you know, maybe you're a government and you're mandating that certain certificates be installed on devices, of every citizen who accesses the internet from that government, you know, within the region that government is, the sovereign. So these are cases where, you know, there is a collection of key material or certificates, and they're on your device, accessible to your operating system, and they can be used to make decisions that impact your security or privacy. And you may not be aware that they're having these impacts if you didn't install the certificate yourself, or if you just don't know how certificates work on devices. But they are going to be processed and understood by your operating system. You know, for the most part, you will get a warning for a self-signed certificate for a web origin unless you install that self-signed certificate in your operating system and tell someone to, you know, force it to be trusted. And that's your operating system trying to protect you. Self-signed certificate, you shouldn't trust that. But maybe you know better. Maybe you're a developer and you've got a self-signed certificate for something and you just want it to be accepted. And you don't want your operating system to complain to you every time you connect through that. Then you can install that certificate. Or, you know, maybe you're wanting to install a different set of root certificates for another use case. You know, maybe it's an IoT use case and you want those certificates to be available, you know, for some reason. So that's the trust stores piece is like operating systems tend to have a place where they put these things. And if you want your software to be processed in the same way the operating system would normally process these things, like that's where you need to go to install these kinds of resources. And the sub-resource integrity stuff, I linked to that. And that spec is it covers the concept of the browser wants to check the integrity of an external resource. So you could imagine you have a web page and you're loading jQuery, which is a very common JavaScript library that lots of people use. So jQuery is also a really great place to put privacy destroying malware because you know that lots of things are going to use it. So you might want to check the integrity of the jQuery bundle before the browser will do anything with it. And then you could put sub-resource integrity check on that. And that way, if the attacker compromises the jQuery resource server, that browser will automatically not process that script because the resource integrity check is broken. And so it forces the attacker to go to two places to compromise instead of just going to a CDN that serves JavaScript resources and compromising them there and then having every web browser automatically serve malware that's loading that particular script tag.
Cool. Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Awesome. I think I see Andreas on the – I don't know what A plus is, but I can't type. Yeah. Andreas?
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Super useful to hear this. One of the things I was wondering is how do you see the evolution of this and what features specific to JOTS do you see being used here? Because most of the things that I've saw were JWS instead of JOTS, right? Like,
yeah, exactly. You know, it's a good call out. You know, I think there are things that are worthy of exploring, right? There are, you know, especially when we think about things with, you know, the way VCs work, right? Intermediary, changing hands, et cetera. Well, that gives us some flexibility to think about some of the properties that are built into JOTS and just using them as is, that may be appropriate for like, hey, this is part of my wire transfer aspects and things like that, right? So there are things there, but this is really just setting the baseline. This is the minimum. And that's why that, you know, is what's being approached from a standardization standpoint. Now, can you go further? Yeah, 100%. Right? And that's one of the nice things about it. I think the obvious one that comes to mind is your certificate chaining and checking that stuff, right? That comes up in a lot of both regulatory and enterprise scenarios where not only do you want to know that the public key is from so-and-so, right, and that there, that something else has happened there, but you might need to know some other items about that as far as, is it tied back into a cert chain? Has there been a revocation that's managed centrally elsewhere that you need to check against, in addition to maybe the credential status checking and things like that? So those are all things that I think when we think about exploiting additional properties of JOTS, those are, you know, those are things there. And yeah, I think as Ori noted, right, it's the, this is where profiles or building out like a specification around a specific use case, that's where you can then leverage that stuff around that, those specific use cases. Does that make sense, Andres?
Yeah, it does. Thanks. Yeah. I guess like, yeah, cool. To Ray's point, like, yeah, JWTs are all JWSs.
Yeah, exactly. That's one of the nice things about it. It's also one of the downsides, right? It's at least some open questions of like, well, do we want to do this? Well, it depends on your scenario, right? That's the flexibility there. I did see, I think it was Keith posted a question around open badges, in VC JOTS. You know, asking like, hey, would we want to go down this path with, open badges or should demonstrate a way of doing it? I mean, sure, obviously we're putting the spec out. There's no reason not to. I think one nice thing to think about is when we think about this credential side, right? Strip the stuff out and drop this right in, right? So there's really not a lot of lift to go in and say, hey, you know, I just, you know, want to go use VC JOT, with something that's already got a well-defined model. Cool. Great. Use that well-defined model and just drop it in and sign it a different way. Any other questions from the group here? I'm going to put Ori on the spot talking about like well-defined model and what happens if you want to go test it with this approach. How long did it take you to go test this with the entire traceability vocab, Ori?
Well, what do you mean? Like, do you mean like if you have a library that supports standard signature algorithms, how hard is it to sign arbitrary JSON?
Yes, basically.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's pretty easy. Different libraries are going to, you know, have different APIs for the standards. So you might find that, you know, it's, you know, a Python library might use the builder interface. A scheme library might have like a lot of functional interfaces for producing signatures. Go and Rust, they're going to expose different APIs for performing a standard cryptographic operation. The good news is that most cryptographic libraries will attempt to support standard cryptography wherever possible because it's what gives them interoperability. So, you know, for example, the Web Crypto API supports ES256, but to implement ES256 in Web Crypto, it's awkward. You have to like experience Web Crypto, which isn't really all that fun. But the signatures you get out on the other side of that are standard compliant ES256 signatures. You have to do some work to get them from Web Crypto, but you know, you might use an off the shelf HOSI library and it's going to produce ES256 JSON web signatures like in a much faster, and easier sort of developer experience. And you know, in general, if you're signing content of a known type, you're going to have a really easy time. Because a lot of the standards in cryptography have been built around the idea of I'm going to protect the content type And then I'm going to integrity protect the payload of that type. And then a verifier can check the signature after reviewing the header. And then a verifier can process the payload according to the content type. And that's a safe API because you don't accidentally start processing content that an attacker had mutated. And so most standard JSON Web Signature libraries, when you're processing a JSON Web Signature that's a JSON Web Token, they will only give you decoded JSON if the signature checks. And it'll just give you an error otherwise. And so you'll be looking at Base64 encoded stuff until you've done your security check. And you can decode that Base64 and blow your foot off if you want. That's always an option in cryptography. But it's important to sort of think about the standards are one layer of defense. The APIs that you build for those standards are another layer of defense. And you want to sort of use both of those layers wherever possible. That's it.
Cool. Thanks, Ori. Any other comments?
I was muted and talking. I wanted to comment quickly on something I saw fly by in the chat. And I think Dave Longley brought up a really good comment, which is, and it was specifically, I think, in relation to open badges. Like, hey, what about embedding stuff in a web page for, you know, to make sure it gets picked up by a search engine, et cetera, right? That is a case where doing things like thinking about having the unencoded side or a, you know, paired up encoded, unencoded is useful. But the good example of something that's getting adoption today, like, hey, I want to verify this thing is what it says it is and is it rolled out and it's a piece of media I found on the web that's getting picked up by search engines, et cetera, is actually kind of come out of, I want to say at this point now, you know, BBC, New York Times, Intel, Adobe, others, right, are playing in this, is the content authenticity side. And what's interesting about that, and I think there's a lot of correlations back into open badges in some ways, right? I've got some piece of thing that I need to make sure is actually authentic, et cetera. And that's being handled with embedded CBOR, right? And in a way that's very in line with the direction that I think JOTS 2.0 are going, BC JOT 2.0 is going. So that's just something to bear in mind. Like when you're thinking about exposing this content, exposing content that might be on the web that you then need to verify, you know, you're not necessarily doing that embedded proof side the way you would be doing otherwise. You might be externalizing it, maybe taking the payload and keeping it unencoded, you know, per other RFCs, et cetera. So those are cases that you just need to have in mind there.
All right. Thanks, Mike. I think we're at time. So I just want to give a quick preview of what's coming. So next week, we'll have a discussion around Bitcoin's ordinal DID method. And then the week after that, we'll have people from Velocity Network talking about their latest thing. And then the week after that, we have Phil Windley talking about, kind of giving an overview of the book on learning digital identity. And earlier, Mike mentioned about we got one of the co-authors of CBOR talking about concise binary object representation on July 11th. So a lot of cool things coming up. Feel free, make sure that you can join our discussions and then also share these events with your friends and people who might be interested to learn more. All right. Thanks a lot. Have a good one. Bye.